Off the Ball Breakfast.
And he said what he's realised this summer is that he just wants to be loved. And if he feels the love, he will give it back to you in return on the pitch.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
You're welcome to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 7. Thank you for tuning in, folks. We hope you're doing great around the country. What is coming up over the next 6 hours on your radio? Well, the Republic of Ireland suffered a 1-0 defeat to Portugal in last night's World Cup qualifier in Lisbon. They went out in their shields. The ex-international striker David Connolly and David Snaid, the journalist, will review the match at 4 o'clock. We've got the GAA Club Championships in full swing with many county finals happening today. We're going to be across all the scores during the afternoon and we'll bring you a GAA hour as well at 6 o'clock. Our feature interview today, a joint one, ex-Kildare footballer Johnny Doyle and former Irish international rugby player Sean O'Brien. They've got a new venture linking clubs with managers, coaches and support staff. We're going to hear from them at about 5 o'clock. And we have the Sunday paper review with Adrian Barry, Westmeath's finest Adrian Barry and Monaghan's finest Shane Hannan with me for the news round. Good afternoon, gents. Happy October.
Morning, gents.
Good afternoon.
I don't feel... Do we feel happy this morning? Today, this afternoon?
Yes.
Oh. It's a funny feeling, isn't it?
I don't know. Like, net result the same. There's been a lot of chat about it, like, you know, the sucker blow idea. Oh, we didn't deserve that. They had 30 shots. No, 6 of them on target. We had 2. None on target. You know, I'm not sure about the fact that we didn't deserve it. We're playing 2, you know, a bank of 5 and a bank of 4, and it was, let's settle in for the ride here and see how we go. And, like, maybe there'll be a long ball at a certain point that we could potentially just, you know, eke something out of it. But I don't think, while we should be encouraged and we should feel positive about the spirit of the team and we should feel like it's a step forward from where we were previously, I don't think we should feel as if we were hard done by.
Moral victory. It's a moral victory. And we saw this in Farrow under Stephen Kenny. This was the third game of the campaign. If they played like that in the first game of the campaign, you'd think of yourself, great start under Hamer for the campaign. But we were calamitous in the first 15 minutes against Hungary. Then we went to Armenia. I think it might be underplayed that there was a long journey to Armenia and there was a lot of heat in Armenia. And we only made 2 changes to that game. And Seamus Coleman, the leader of the team, the spiritual leader, was not involved in the squad last month. Festi Abasele didn't play last month. Jason Malumbi didn't play last month. And you're thinking to yourself, where was the shape last month? Where was the leadership last month? And it's 3 games in now. It's a defeat, a moral victory. And that's why I think it'll work against Hamer Hogginson. If there was any start, maybe thinking of a reprieve. Look, maybe they do win 3 games in a row and get to 10 points and we do slip through as the second best team in the group. But at Portugal, we're flat for me. I still think they've got a big Ronaldo-shaped problem in their team. And I think we can maybe look at the short-termism of being proud of what we saw last night. But also, we didn't beat the 105th-ranked side in the world, Armenia. We haven't had a signature victory as a nation, probably since Wales in 2017. That's 8 years ago. Maybe you can think of some things that's happened since then, but I can't. So therefore, why didn't we see this in Armenia?
Yeah. Mm. Well, we do have an ability, I don't know, as a nation to like get ourselves up against the better teams. It's really incredible.
You said yesterday, like it would be the most Irish thing ever to get a result.
Well, it's a draw. And it was, but Shane Keegan was saying it as well on the football programme that, but this is our way, isn't it? To get in, to get stuck in, to be dogged, to be the underdog. And what is the certainty we're going to be in Armenia on Tuesday?
I don't feel certain about that at all.
No.
As you say, no shots in target.
Like, I expect we will. I'm not going to sort of shy away from that. I expect we will. But I know I sat here in this seat and said the exact same thing before the previous game. So, like, we'll have to wait and see. But listen, there were a lot of reasons to be positive. It's just such a very different game against very different quality of opposition. It'll dictate a totally different game plan. There will be different team selections, obviously, some of them forced by suspension. So it will be interesting to see. Like, I mean, it's a level of, you'd hope that level of desire that we saw last night, that there's whatever about the other nuts and bolts about tactics and who selected where, that is a baseline expectation. And I would say in a significant part, was down to the inclusion of Seamus Coleman last night. Now, listen, there will be a horses for courses maybe, but against Armenia.
He was giving out the oranges last month before the game in Dublin.
I was making this point on the pay-per-view. If Seamus Coleman has an ability to lace up a pair of boots, let's never leave him out of a squad again as long as he's playing football. Whatever about the team. There was a couple of moments last night, one on the ball early in the first half, one on the ball and one without it, where he was gesturing to the midfield, come forward, take a ball, take a pass. Like the sort of thing that sort of has been absent, I suppose, over the last while. Like they clearly haven't been able to make up their minds to do that themselves. Cullen and Malumbi last night. But to have somebody on the pitch who's been able to say, come forward, take the pass, make a shape. Like there was loads of lovely, neat Triangle plays at various points, and you can't take that for granted anymore. There'll be people rolling their eyes now listening to this. Oh, brilliant, we played a couple of triangle plays. We haven't been able to see that over the last while, and you can't progress unless you have that little bit of technical ability. But again, you know, Mikey Johnson came on, very frustrating watch, I have to say, for me last night, maybe one of the most frustrating watches, just basic stuff like trying to take a touch and just wasn't there last
referee
night.
Had a shocker as well.
Yeah, and even the penalty, like we saw a few quick replays of it. It was hard to tell, but it certainly didn't look like a penalty to me. Luckily, Quiven Keller has the record that he does, and I know, Adrian, you were over in Brentford when he saved from Bruno Fernandes recently as well. So, like, he just has that aura from penalties. But yeah, I was just looking at the clock, even at half time, I'm thinking, geez, this is brilliant. And I didn't see it coming. I said on the show yesterday, I thought we'd lose 3 or 4 nil. And that was based on the evidence of the first two games, to be honest. But they were so defensively solid. And you're looking at the clock at 60 minutes, Portugal bring on the triple subs, 65. Get to 80 minutes, and then, Jesus, we're nearly there. Gets to injury time, there's 7 minutes added. And then the eyes roll back to the back of the head, but wouldn't have mattered anyway. And it felt inevitable at the same time. It was a lovely delivery. There was actually echoes of Robbie Brady and Lille to the goal as well.
Well, it was poignant, wasn't it, for Ruben Neves?
Yeah.
He was obviously so close to Diogo Jota.
Wearing number 21 as well.
Look, it just felt for me, over the Hagrumsen era, there were moments of getting the job done against weak opposition, say Finland and Bulgaria, keeping our Nations League status. That builds us to a place where the World Cup campaign comes along. You've got to beat the weaker teams. You have to beat the weaker teams. Like Scotland at the moment, right? What have they done? They've drawn in Denmark. They've beaten Belarus and Greece. Northern Ireland beat Slovakia the other day quite comfortably in Belfast, a team that beat Germany in their group. They've also gone to Luxembourg and won. These are the kind of countries you're probably comparing yourself at, not England or another country. So that's the frustrating part. Now, qualification, a different era, different team. But 1990 World Cup, we drew in Hungary, we drew in Northern Ireland, we beat them both at home. 1994 World Cup qualification, we beat Albania, Latvia and Lithuania, home and away. You have to be beating Armenia away and home and giving yourself a chance going to Budapest. We've blown that chance last month. It's not about last night for me, it's about last month.
Well, that's the frustrating thing for me, and the game as a microcosm of that, right? Getting through the 90 minutes and at nil all. Like, this is going to sound ludicrous, and I appreciate that. But, like, for me, that's all I was looking for last night, that this game would not be over in the first 10 minutes. Like, a loss in a lot of ways was inevitable. I know how close we came to actually eking out a draw, but in a lot of ways, and like, the 30 shots, 6 of them on target, plays that out. But for me, getting to within some sort of position where we were putting ourselves in a position of getting something out of the game, that's exactly what we did last night. So I wouldn't be too downbeat on that side. And on the penalty as well, like, I watched it back a good few times today, just to get a proper steer on how good a save was it or how good a penalty was it. It was a brilliant penalty. It was a brilliant penalty. Like, he delays his run ever so slightly in the run in just to have Kelleher double guessing himself. Kelleher commits. He brilliantly 90 degrees square shot right down the middle of the goal. I'd say he dissected the goal and Kelleher committed. How impossible is it to get something on that ball once you've committed and the penalty taker has hit it exactly where he wanted to hit it? Now, it was missing a fraction aloft, if you were to be very critical on Ronaldo's part. But to stretch the leg out, and like you said, Jane, I was there for the Bruno Fernandes penalty a few weeks back, and listen, 5 minutes delay, masterstroke from Keith Andrews, had Bruno, maybe he was in his head a little bit. But again, it was a very different penalty. It was out to Kelleher's left. He had to get down low. And he did brilliantly last night. How do we feel about his defence of the goal?
It was a Kelleher mistake, probably. Like, he probably could have done better. But then also, he wouldn't have had to come and claim it had the midfielders tracked back.
I see it in the round. Paddy Bonner made mistakes. You know, and Paddy Bonner had great days in Ireland jersey as well. So I think Kelleher has, I mean, watched a lot of Brentford this season. I think he's done very well.
Brilliant.
You've seen him in person. I said this before the goal. I said he's got a great 10 years ahead of him. Yeah. Like, now, it just seems to me that he's growing into the role of being a number one keeper. And I think we're lucky to have him.
Yeah.
There's an incredible
photo. It's even like Jacob Ryan played well last night. Yeah. He didn't play necessarily as well in September. So the shape was better. The shape of the defensive system was better. We had a lot of energy in the team. I think the wingers, even the first half, did well. You had that pace in the team. So
I think our problem is when the game opens up a bit, as it will do on Tuesday night, where is our midfield? Like last night, they're protected because two low blocks. They're not as exposed.
Josh Cullen's out, by the way, as well.
That's going to be a big... Like, it ain't going anywhere. You know, like, we spent, 10, 12 years post-Robbie Keane going, we just need somebody up front who can bang the goal in. And now we're like, oh, we do have a couple of those now. And now our problems are a bit further back the pitch.
We had an emotional moment here, as we have all week, for Nathan Murphy on the show yesterday, obviously, the great Nathan. And I think it was a fitting final interview for Nathan to speak to Seamus Coleman.
Yeah, I was thinking of him during the second half. I was thinking this is going to be a brilliant draw in Lisbon to finish off Nathan's tenure with Off the Ball, but wasn't to be. But yeah, Seamus Coleman, always honest, always open, and I know Nathan has spoken to him many, many times over the years, both at club and international level, and in the stadium, well after the full-time whistle had blown last night, Seamus Coleman gave his, as always, honest views to Nathan Murphy. Have a listen.
Well, Seamus, it's a long time since the full-time whistle. There's obviously been quite the post-mortem going on. Everyone devastated?
Yeah, everyone's gutted. Like, obviously, you know, we came here, we wanted to put a bit of pride in the shirt. A bit of kind of, I don't know, what I see Ireland to be, you know, hard to beat. Everyone fighting like you wouldn't believe to get back into shape and that. But I do think sometimes as a group we find it easier against the bigger nations, which shouldn't be the case. And, you know, all eyes now are to Tuesday and, you know, trying to keep it alive somewhat because, yeah, point tonight would have been nice and then go beat Armenia. But we've got luck to Tuesday and we most certainly can't take Tuesday for granted either.
Unfortunately, with the injuries, you've sort of been in and out of squads for the last few years. What sort of squad did you find when you came in on Monday, post what happened in Armenia, when you're talking about bringing back the mentality and obviously the massive disappointment of what happened over in Yerevan?
Ah, yeah, listen, they're young boys, but they love playing for Ireland as well. And let's not get it wrong either. There's been plenty of results I've been on the end of like that, and other senior lads, and it's disappointing. And you know, we haven't had a habit of qualifying for tournaments either, so maybe these lads get the fingers pointed at them a little bit. But I do think it is important, you know, as a group, as a nation, that we never lose sight of being proud of what we are. And you know, there might be a lot of people calling for us to be like Barcelona or whatever the case may be, but we should be proud of what we are sometimes as well, and use that. And I think tonight you could see that. And the test for us now is Tuesday, when you would be expected to win. So we need to make sure that we do that and give our fans, you know, and just the fans that travelled over tonight after that Armenian result, you know, to still come and support us like they did. And at the reception we got at the end, you just wish and hope that, you know, good times are ahead again soon.
What was the game plan tonight? Do you feel, did you execute it for sort of 91 and a half minutes?
Oh yeah, I thought we did. Like, we knew they were going to have a lot of the ball. They're a top team, and I thought we defended spaces quite well, and a couple of times we were caught out, and then a couple of times we put our foot in the ball as well, and we looked nice and we looked controlled, and probably didn't create enough chances, to be honest. But the game plan was going well, and ultimately, you know, we got sucker punched in the end.
Obviously the penalty didn't matter in the end, but a bit of frustration with the referee as the game wore on?
Not as the game wore on. I just listen, I found it difficult to speak to him all night, to be honest. But
not because you weren't the captain, or
because that's what I thought. But you know, he's speaking with Bruno, so I challenged him on that. I said, "So you speak to Bruno, not me." Just listen. I'm sure he was doing his best, and but frustrating for us at times trying to understand some of the decisions.
I think a lot of people will look at tonight and your performance and wonder how you weren't in the squad 3 weeks ago for those games. How frustrated were you not to be involved in those two, and considering the level of performance you can produce on a night like this?
Listen, I believe in myself, and you know, that's my biggest trait. I believe in myself, and I've got fire in my belly to perform. And if I'm training, you know, at club level, and I'm training well, and listen, Jake's been doing well at club level, I do always think I can give something to Ireland, and I'm pretty honest as well. When I can't, I'll be honest as well. So I was disappointed, but that's football. I'm not going to refuse a call up. I love playing for my country. This is an unbelievable experience playing for Ireland, and I kind of wanted to show people tonight as well. You know, a few people have thought, you know, I've not been playing much, and a few people have said that, so I wanted to show them on the pitch.
And it sounds as well a bit of a rallying cry for Tuesday night, because it's not over. It's a very tight group still, but it has to be 3 points.
Listen, it has to be 3 points. And as a group, we've got to soak up that pressure, whatever it is. It's going to be on a Tuesday night. We're expected to win. But like I said, we got beat out there, and we could have got beat by more. scores, so we can't take them for granted, and we've got to be focused going into that game, and our fans will be behind us like they always are. But yeah, it's a big game for us. Listen, we need other games to go our way, but ultimately every time you put on the green shirt, you've heard me say it before, if you're bottom of the group or top of the group, it should mean the same thing.
Not the birthday you wanted, but not bad for a 37-year-old.
No, not bad, and good luck to you as well.
Cheers, thanks Seamus, fair play.
What an interview, Seamus Coleman and Nathan Murphy.
Two of the all-time greats. Nothing sums up Nathan Murphy's off-the-ball career more than a late, late-headed 1-0 defeat in Lisbon.
Heartbreak. Like Mayo over the years. Yeah.
That was a touch of class, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. He's obviously a listener.
Yeah,
I believe in myself, and that's my biggest trait. It's almost like something for the tattoo parlours, to be honest.
Class.
I have these silhouette jerseys of Van Basten and Maradona at home, kind of intimidating black silhouettes of their faces. You can almost imagine Coleman silhouette with the in the back. I believe myself, and that's my biggest trait.
How does that marry up with the idea that he knows when he's not on it and shouldn't be involved as well? I thought it was an interesting comment.
Yes, I mean, he played in a couple of League Cup games, but he hasn't been featuring at all for Everton in the Premier League. But look, obviously he's kept his fitness up, and maybe, as he says, the fire in the belly. Some people can just stand apart. I mean, to me, every time I hear Seamus Coleman, I just think future Ireland manager.
Yeah.
No question.
That'll be 10, maybe 20 years down the line. But he, this guy is destined, surely, for a career in football coaching management.
Yeah. There was some suggestion that he should have stayed in the pitch towards the end, but I thought the commentators called it out, and you could see him off screen, kind of gesticulating to the sideline with about 5 minutes to go that, you know, his night was done. And like the context, JD, that you were talking about, the number of minutes he's played this season, that was really no great surprise. You know, if he stays on the pitch and the goal goes in, everybody's saying, what the hell was he doing? He hasn't played 90 minutes all year. Swap him out. I don't know. Hard one to call.
Yeah, he's destined for management, and he's the type of person, I feel, who, even if his career in club management goes so well that he becomes, you know, he's well beyond the Irish job in terms of what they can afford to bring in, I still think it's a job he'd love to have at some point in the future. Like, the word love is thrown around quite often, lads, but I do love.
Well, you are a loving guy.
I'm a loving guy, but Shane. I do love Seamus Coleman. I think he's one of those footballers. He's probably my favourite footballer. He's the footballer you would love to have played for your club, and I'm sure Irish Everton fans are just absolutely delighted to have had him for so long.
I went through a bit of love phase with Son in the last 10 years. So yeah, I once got a Heung-min Son birthday cake. So
right.
He's such, like, listen, I
know, so I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I very firmly believe that we get too carried away with the idea of role models in sport. Like, they're professional sports people and
humans and...
Yeah, and flawed, right? Like, and all of those things. So sort of like putting them up as some sort of, you know...
Argon of virtue.
Correct, for your kids and all. It's not a good idea. I might make an exception when it comes to Seamus Coleman.
Yeah, what a role model.
Just seems like every sinew of his being on and off the pitch always says the right thing. You know, have you ever once doubted on the pitch that he's given 100%? I'm not sure there's many other footballers you could say that about.
No. Even Roberto Martinez was asked about him in the pre-match build-up and spoke so glowingly about him.
When Keane was involved with Ireland, Roy Keane, under Martin O'Neill, he always called out Coleman. Always called him out as that kind of, maybe seen a bit of
himself. He takes responsibility, isn't it? I think that's a big factor of it. You don't often see that in modern life, not to mind modern football.
Well, I tell you, you feel a lot better for yourself if you do.
Yeah, yeah. Take ownership.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he does.
Now, you need to take ownership of the rest of this news round. Where are we going next?
We're getting carried away with the Irish stuff. The World Cup qualifiers continue later today. Scotland take on Belarus from 5 o'clock. They sit second in Group C, only behind Denmark on goal difference. While there is action ongoing in the WSL, goals in the Chelsea and Everton game. So Chelsea 1, Spurs 0, and Everton 1, Manchester United 0, our latest scores in the second half. It's goalless between Aston Villa and Leicester City and London City Lionesses and West Ham. At 2:30, it's Arsenal against Brighton. And from 4:30, Liverpool take on Manchester City. Elsewhere, a number of GAA County Championships down for decision this afternoon. The action getting underway with the Antrim Senior Football Final between Cargan and Dunloy at 1:30. Meads Football Champion will be crowned as Summerhill and Rattoath face off in the decider at 2 o'clock. Carnew Emmets take on Bray Emmets in the Wicklow Hurling Final at 3 p.m. Half an hour later at 3:30, Naas will be looking to complete the first part of a double when they take on Maynooth in the final of the Kildare Hurling Championship. At the same time, Gidor and Niamh Connell meet in a repeat of the 2023 Donegal Senior Football Championship Final from 3:30, and plenty of other football finals as well to mention. In Clare, it's Aero Ennis against St Joseph's Dura Bearfield from 3:30. Same time for Culleira Strandhill and Shamrock Gales in Sligo Senior Final. The Laois decider, Cortwood against Port Arlington from 4 o'clock. At the same time in Longford, it's Cullum Kill against Killow Young Emmets, and in Cavan, Gowna against Kings Court Stars from 4 p.m. in the Senior Football Championship decider there. Just one result as well from yesterday to mention. There's plenty of games yesterday that were really excellent, but Anthony Miles, of course, friend of the show, he's involved in the coaching team with Mayo legend Conor Mortimer with Kilbride in Meath in the Intermediate Championship. They became Intermediate Champions yesterday. Kilbride 20 points, Castletown 116. So a bit of a fairy tale story. They only won the Junior Championship in 2023, but back in the day, of course, a massive team, Kilbride in Meath football, but back where they belong in the Senior Championship for next year.
You ever been to a county final?
In my home county, yes. Yeah. Been to a bit of Monaghan finals, but I don't think I've ever been to.
What's your club?
Monaghan Harps.
Have they ever won a county title, Monaghan?
Never a Senior Championship title. No, which is a shame for a town team.
What's your club, Adrian?
Athlone is my home club, and they're possibly, certainly were up to recently, the most winningest club in Westmeath. Needless to say, they haven't won one in about 25 years, but Chemical Croaks Jetty, as you know, and I've been to a lot of those finals over the last few years. They're in a semi-final today at Parnell Park in the hurling.
Yeah.
The mighty Kilmacook Crocs, Jimmy. Yeah. I know that you were going to intervene with that.
Great dual club, in fairness.
Yeah. Well, they were the club attached to my school in South Dublin, Clonkeen College, yeah. And in 1995, they brought the... they were the champions the same year as Dublin with the All-Ireland, and they brought the Sam McGuire to the school, yeah. So you definitely remember that.
But it's incredible. Like, even recently, in my own county, in Monaghan, there was like a senior championship game between Clontibert and Scotstown, ended in a draw, but you have... On one side for Clontibert, Conor McManus sweeping over two-pointers, and even old favourites like Desi Moan and Vinnie Corey still playing, and current county players. And then the other side, Rory Began and Conor McCarthy. So like, it's a great opportunity to see unbelievable county players, especially with the new rules as well. I think that the attendances at club games generally seem to be up across the country.
Can you allow me a quick sell, Jeddy, since we're on the topic of Kevin Crooks here?
Sells are all, all welcome here.
I've been out there all week making a mini documentary for Off the Ball as part of the G
wow.
Where We All Belong series. And myself and Stephen Kisby Green and Rachel Sheehan, SKG, we've been out there. We were out there this week and we're out there again this evening. Talking to a lot of recognisable people and then an awful lot of people that you'll have never heard of, but the main thrust, so I've been in there for the last 4 or 5 years as a coach with the young lads team, and yeah, I've never been involved in a club like it, and I was delighted to get the opportunity to go out and sort of shine a light on it. But we've Rory O'Carroll and his brother Oisín and his dad Liam and the two kids on the pitch playing football and chatting away about what the club means to them. We have, you know, the Ronnie Murray who runs the men's shed. We're going to talk to Joan Keogh, the chairperson of the club tonight. Very much a one club model. We're in with the choir this evening, see what sort of offering they have. We've sat down with Fergal Whiteley and his mum Mary Whiteley, who's another club legend, and his sister Aisling Whiteley. Fergal will be playing at Parnell Park today. One of the Dublin players, of course, who was involved in that brilliant win over Limerick during the year. So covers A to Z and coming to an off the ball near you soon.
Soon.
Next week.
Great. Look forward to it, folks. Look forward to it. So they're playing Nafina, and we got Lucan Sarsfields against Ballyboden and the hurling in Dublin. We got Kilkenny semi-finals, Mull Nevada, Lachlan Gales, Dixburg against Ballyhale, Shamrocks, Wexford semi-finals, Rathnure against Navena and St Martin's against Ferns.
The only shame about it is that there's so many stories. Like, I haven't even mentioned, like, yesterday Mike Cullen beat Trim Stars in a brilliant Galway semi-final by a point. Salty Knocknacara knocked out Cora Finn in Galway.
We have the GAR. We want people to be listening.
Well, this is
7
it too.
O'clock.
More to come later on.
The GAR.
Sorry, apologies, of course. Glenn also knocked out in Derry, by the way, last night against the Dunedin Rossa.
Yeah, Kula last week.
Yeah.
It's hard to even get out of your county, let alone.
And yes, just to mention as well, in Armagh, Crossmaglen Rangers lost by a point last night to St Patrick's Cullyhanna in the Armagh semi-final the day before Madden. Got through to a final, so it's going to be Madden against Cullyhanna in the Armagh final. Neither have won a senior championship before, so stories aplenty in the club championship.
Luke Littler and Luke Humphreys facing off. Because most people just get into darts at Christmas, January, but some people love it all year round.
Indeed, the two Lukes, Luke Littler and world-born Luke Humphreys, facing off in the final of the World Grand Prix tonight. The World Darts Champion hit 10-180s as he breezed past Johnny Clayton 5-1, while Humphreys got past Danny Noppert 5-3. The pair have met 10 times already this year, with Littler coming out on top in 6 of those matches. Some golf as well. The Open de España final day ongoing in Madrid. So Marco Penge, the Englishman, leads on 15 under par. He's 1 over through 4 holes for his final round. That's a 1-shot lead over his fellow countryman Daniel Brown. From an Irish interest, Tom McKibben, 1 over through 4 holes for his round, to sit on 9 under for the tournament. But that's, of course, 6 off at the current lead. Just check and update my page to see if Tommy Kippen has, in fact, progressed from that particular point. But no, he hasn't. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on Tommy Kippen across the course of the day. But, yeah, he's had a decent turn. But back in a tie for 13th. He's won over through 7 holes now for the day. So that's Tommy Kibben's latest from the Open de España.
I'd worry where Tiger Woods would be in terms of his body when he's 60. So what's the story now?
Yeah, he's had further back surgery, Tiger Woods, which will delay his return to the golf course. The 15-time major champion hasn't played competitively since missing the cut at the Open in July of last year. So some more worrying news for fans of Tiger Woods. Just to mention some boxing as well. Irish boxers are a step closer to participating in the LA Olympics in 3 years' time. Governing body, the IABA, has voted to disaffiliate with the controversial IBA and align itself fully with new organisation World Boxing. The motion was passed at the association's AGM in Belfast with 81% of members present voting in favour. Olympic organisers have threatened to drop boxing from the Games if countries continue to associate with the International Boxing Association. And there is racing today. 8 races went to post in Cork from 1:10. And
yes,
just underway. Another 8 races in Naas, John.
So for the golf fans, Quinta de Lago won the opener at Cork, 15-2 shot. Dunham Myler riding for Jessica Harrington. Johnny Ward actually is a horse running today at Cork.
Does he?
What?
Yeah, in the 2:17. the William Hill Each Way Extra Series handicap hurdle.
Do you know the name of it?
Book Away Freddy.
Book Away Freddy.
What's that all about?
He just has a horse in training with John McConnell, and look, Book Away Freddy hasn't had the best start to his career, so you might not be wanting to be backing it today, but it's definitely worth having a look at. I'm just fascinated that Johnny actually has a horse, and the colours and everything for it and everything.
Would he come out and interview himself afterwards?
I literally asked him that in the pod.
Okay.
It'd be like the two Johnnies, Johnny.
The one Johnny.
Yeah. 28-1 shot, so he's an outsider. Book Away Freddy. But it's just fascinating that he picked his colours and everything. So,
what colours did he go for? Maroon and white?
No, he went for
Gordon Elliott's side.
Black sleeves, green body with a white sash and black and white hat. So, but it's funny because he's put his name on the ownership as Sean Wachenverd.
Oh, okay.
So it's Osgailge.
Did you say the colours were green, white and red roughly?
No, green, white and black.
Green, white and black. Green, white and black. Okay.
Because they're not my own colours. Speaking of colours, there's lots of colour in the papers, lots of colour writing. Adrian, today you had Kieran Cunningham and Cliona Foley, journalists, on the show. So we're going to have that between about 2:30, 3:00. So maybe give us a flavour of what was in there.
Main topics, clearly the football dominates, and loads of angles in that. Some opinion pieces, given obviously the wrap-up time last night, probably more of those to come over the course of the week and depending what happens on Tuesday. But yeah, plenty of opinion and plenty of reports and player ratings and all that good stuff. But yeah, Shane McGrath in the Mail, maybe go to him, just a quick mention on the football here. On Ronaldo particularly, obviously the player you love to hate. The billionaire Galactico in these moments. He was less the billionaire Galactico in these moments than Mr. Picklepants, the hammy hedgehog from the Toy Story movies. His shtick after the penalty missed was ridiculous, blessing himself, shaking his head and talking to himself while his teammates presumably muttered under their breaths and saved their real feelings for the WhatsApp group that he doesn't know about, which paints a nice picture that I think gives us all a bit of sucker this morning. But the other thing, sort of on a more serious note, was just about the future of Heimir Hallgrímsson, and Shane McGrath writes, "This could change the conversation around the future of the manager, but this was a team and a display that didn't consider anything beyond the 90 minutes. Does it change the conversation?"
Well, Armenia just... the Armenia game last month, that's to me, it's... like, if you're reaching the playoff and you're getting very close, then you're maybe saying, look, we know what the underlying macro factors here are. You brought us to a place of respectability. But it's the Armenia result last month, to me, is a... makes it a question mark, and at the moment we're still bottom of the group.
Yeah,
I think you talk about a question mark, and I think we left the last window saying, "Well, this is over now."
Yeah,
regardless of what happens,
I think it's over.
Whereas now there's like a bit of a maybe.
But and to be fair to Heimir, he's talked a great game, and he has said recently that he's not going to stay where he's not wanted. So that's a lot of candor, and you got to admire that. And look, did he do well? Yes, last night. I have to say, he did.
Yeah,
but on the whole, that'd be beating weaker teams.
Yeah, I think his Irish epitaph was written that night in Yerevan, to be honest with you. The players seem to like him, and he is a good communicator, and I actually like listening to him. And I did feel really sorry for him last night with the camera panned to him after the Neves goal went in. But I think his days are numbered, unless, as you say, he has to win 3 from 3 now and then get through a playoff. It's unlikely.
Look, maybe we're talking small margins, but is there an argument that Damien Duff or Stephen Bradley or Roy Keane could do a better job? I suppose that's the only thing you need to ask. And also, can we afford managers? Like David Myler was on the show yesterday saying he'd love to manage Ireland one day. It's still And Martin O'Neill was on here recently going, anybody would love to manage the country. So people will want to manage Ireland. So it might not be about the remuneration on offer, but the question with all these things is, you know, if you get somebody new in, what does that mean for the coaching team? Like, you know, respected people in the game, Paddy McCarthy, John O'Shea, he's starting from scratch again. The one blessing, and Nathan was saying this yesterday in the show as well, is that we have a Euros. Surely, like, it'll be nearly very difficult for us not to be at the Euros as a host nation in Dublin. So you got something to build towards. Imagine you didn't have that. And that will be a good thing for the new manager, but they got to get the decision right if they're going to make a change.
I mean, is there a danger we fall into being a bit of a Manchester United in that we keep changing Possibly. The manager and ultimately the players are what they are? I know that's a different dynamic, clearly, in terms of who they can buy or not. But I do wonder the answer to that question. Would Roy Keane or Damien Duff or John O'Shea do a better job? I definitely don't know the answer to that.
And I can think of, and Irish fans are going to do this, you can think of an argument against each of them. Like, John O'Shea is too closely associated perhaps with this tenure and the previous tenure. Robbie Keane, a lot of Irish fans have issues with the fact that he was managing in Tel Aviv in the middle of a genocide, and that's going to come up. Damien Duff, people are going to say, well, he just left Shelburne at the drop of a hat. Is he going to do that again? But maybe assign Damien Duff on a short-term contract. So for all of these names, Stephen Bradley, maybe the Stephen Kenny stuff comes up. Is it too early for Stephen Bradley?
It'll be one of those names, or maybe Roy Keane. Who's your pick at that four or five?
I'd love to see Roy Keane get it. And look, maybe it goes badly wrong again, but Roy Keane as Ireland manager, I think would be, well, it'd be box office for us in the media for starters.
I'm here till 7 o'clock.
I've a long day.
I'm here till 7 o'clock on the radio, and you're just throwing that into the mix.
Well, we haven't till 7 to bat it around.
Yeah, here, true, yeah. True. But look, it's an interesting one.
I'd see Damien Duff get it.
I would too.
Yeah,
it'd be
well,
absolutely
box
office
as well. Yeah.
But Damien Duff's achievement, I mean, like, Roy Keane did have that achievement with Sunderland in his first season, but that's a long time ago now. I know it's a different level to say Shelburne, but like, Shelburne had no right winning that League of Ireland title last season. None.
Yeah.
And he's been there with he's got 100 caps. Mourinho played under the best, and obviously he's got the connection with the League of Ireland, which is, we're going to need more players from the domestic game. So. But is it even fair to be having this conversation? Look, I suppose it's the nature of football. Like, you're talking about somebody's job. It is the nature of the beast that we discuss this.
Yeah.
And so, like, it is a mad industry. It's a mad game. People are very well paid. So you do sometimes have to talk about this before the...
Hamer knows how many games have we left, whatever it is, the next 3 or 4 games. Wins them all, he's still in a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A draw on Tuesday night, he's probably gone.
Suppose talking heads have really got... Yeah. But it's always good to... Roy, Shane Hannon for Roy Keane. What's the flag again, as I always say, in the Ireland games, the Bart Simpson Monaghan boys on tour.
Monaghan boys on tour.
The other big talking point that there's lots of different angles in the story and the papers, JD, but the only other one we mentioned, and I was kind of taken aback by the volume of stories about it in the sports pages today, was about Jim Gavin. And the legacy of Jim Gavin was a big aspect of it. Like, you know, up to a month ago, this guy went down as one of the greatest GAA icons of all time, given his achievements. And now, listen, there's a recency bias about it, and maybe over the next number of months and years, all this dissipates, and what's left behind is the legacy of a life's work and what he's achieved. But obviously there are challenges to that now. And also the future from Jim Gavin. Michael Foley in the Sunday Times is one of those pieces. Politics was never a place for Gavin. Crash and burn campaign comes as no surprise, given his long-held suspicion of the media. And within the piece he writes... Although it's hard now to see a way back for Gavin to a significant role in public life beyond sport, if the idea ever appealed to him again after the horrors of the past few weeks, the GEA surely won't dispense with his obvious abilities as an overseer of major projects. In an ideal world, Sean Moran wrote in the Irish Times on Wednesday, Gavin would be running a presidential campaign for someone else. And then back to Michael Foley, that's exactly it. It's unfortunate the demise of his presidential bid occurred 24 hours after all the FRC's genuinely game-changing recommendations were cemented into rule, but history will remember that as a quirk of timing. Gavin has a terrific amount to offer the GAA and other organisations in time, and I think that sums it up neatly. It's been an awful few weeks for the man, and like, mistakes on his part, probably mistakes on the part, definitely mistakes on the part of the people who were running his campaign, like, evidently, and I've seen denials of those during the week, make no sense to me whatsoever. But you know, on a human level, and we're a sports show and we operate in the sphere of Jim Gavin, so why wouldn't we say this? But you do have to feel a huge degree of sympathy. You know, mistakes were made, so you accept that, but a great degree of sympathy for him and for what's going on at the minute.
The experiences of Brian Lenihan and Albert Reynolds and Eddie Roach running for the presidency will tell you that is entering into shark-infested waters if you get involved in this. And there are things I have not got a clue about. I can barely change a light bulb. I can't drive. I can't swim. I can't do DIY. There's things I'm no good at and don't have any clue about. But I do know about politics. I do have a degree in it. And I know from the history of presidential campaigns, they are absolutely brutal. And as someone who put Jim Gavin on Dublin's Mount Rushmore, I wish he hadn't run.
I watched, I don't know how I ended up in this YouTube wormhole last night, but I watched back the, was it the Pat Kenny Frontline from the 2011 election with the Sean Gallagher, Martin McGuinness back and forth. And I was just watching it going, this was crazy. I remember it at the time, but you know, all of the candidates coming into this election would have known that that's how nasty it gets for whatever reason or another in the Irish presidential election. And yeah, when you think of the position in Irish society, Jim Gavin was held in before at the start of this campaign, you know, in the Aviation Authority and the six in a row and as a player and everything else besides on the FRC. Just fascinated to see where he goes next. As you said, like, he'd probably take a bit of time away and a bit of time off. But it's a nasty business going for president in this country, as we've seen, and we're going to see in the next couple of weeks as well. So
the Brian Lenihan one was sensational. The mature recollection events, and he disappears down to Athlone and basically goes into a bolt hole, and Charlie Haughey is phoning him, and Pádraig Flynn rocks up on his sister's doorstep, Mary O'Rourke, and says, "Listen, give him up," and she tells him in no certain terms, "F off, nothing to see here." They dispatch helicopters for him. And it just doesn't materialise. But yeah, I mean, great stuff for a Netflix documentary.
Well,
awful to live
this through. Is so real in the years in 20 years' time, what happened to this year. It's like it's made for real in the years. And the thing about Brian Lennon, he topped the poll on the first count, but he didn't win the election. And this is it. You remember Jim Duffy, he was a student who had the tape. Like, so you just you remember these things. You remember Eddie Roach's campaign, like the way it imploded in 1997. Albert Reynolds didn't even get, like, Bertie showed him the ballot paper. Like, you're getting involved in. Like, Jim Gavin was involved in the FRC, just like very, very close to this happening to run for president. So it's, yeah, I mean, what can you say?
Was the Carwell O'Dolig, the thundering
well, I think thundering was not the word that was actually used, but thundering is disgrace was the translation
really
into our society at the time of what was said, where he had to resign. But yeah, this is the first doubleheader, I suppose, one against one. Since 1973 for the presidency, so
it's been mostly held, not to wander too much into politics, but it's mostly held, I felt, between the candidates. Not entirely, some of them have let their guard slip a little bit, but between the two of them, whatever about answering questions from journalists, whatever broadcast they've been on, but between each other, it's been largely blood-free.
Yeah.
It hasn't been an awful lot of barbs.
Correct,
no,
yeah.
No, there are exceptions, but they haven't gone after each other, and I think it's very befitting. I often remember the race for the Ireland rugby captaincy post Brian O'Driscoll. And it had come down to two leading candidates, Johnny Sexton and Jamie Heaslip. Johnny Sexton said, "I keep my counsel. It's not befitting to be overly publicly speaking about this thing. You know, it's befitting of the role to be quiet about it, and if I'm asked to do it, I'd be absolutely honoured, but that's as much as I'm going to say about it." And Jamie Heaslip kind of took the opposite tack and was very publicly talking about his, listen, you're absolutely entitled to do that, you know, his own capabilities and credentials for the role. He ended up getting the role, as it turns out. But I would have always lent more in the Johnny Sexton category of it's less befitting to be braggadocious, to use our friend's terminology on it, then, you know, I think keep your counsel.
Reminds me of a famous story from, you know, I'm a big space geek, before the moon landing, Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong, obviously as commander of Apollo 11, was going to take the first steps on the moon, but Buzz Aldrin started this big campaign, saying, "Oh, my seat's actually closer to the door, and I should be the first to walk on the moon." And his dad got involved, he was high up in the military as well, but Neil Armstrong, being the kind of quiet guy that he was, took a back seat and said, I'm the commander, and I'll just leave it to others to decide, and ultimately he was first out the door. So sometimes
how did they decide?
I think NASA just made the call and said the commander goes out first and comes back
like
in.
Through lots or something.
So yeah, for a big decision like that. But yeah, you take a back seat and maybe that's what works. But then as it gets closer to the election day, like whoever is behind in the polls, and depending how far they are behind in the polls, they have to go on the attack because...
What happens if he ends up winning, if he ends up getting more votes than everybody else?
Well... I came into work today and I've seen more Jim Gavin posters today than any other candidates.
They're all over Monaghan as well, yeah.
So there you go.
What'll happen? Seriously?
What'll happen is that he probably won't take it or resign, then you have to have another election.
Would there be any chance he'd go, all right?
No, because that would sound like a college university kind of election. Yeah. It wouldn't sound like the presidency of Ireland, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre turn of events.
It is
a bizarre turn of events. That was the news round. Adrian and Shane, thank you so much for the conversation this Sunday. We're going to hear from Hamer Holgrimsson and others after this break.